From WBUR Boston, I'm Charles Sennett, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Say the word fundamentalism, and for many, ominous images are formed. Bombed out abortion clinics in the U.S., burning buildings and bloodshed in Bali, settlements in the West Bank, and of course, the crumbling World Trade Center. These are, some would argue, not all the images, not the full picture. For some devout Christians, Muslims, and Jews, fundamentalism is simply returning to the founding principles, the fundamentals of the faith. But as roaring violence persists in the name of God all around the world, and religious groups play a deeper role in politics, can we truly understand religious fundamentalism? How can we break it down? This hour, On Point, defining religious fundamentalism and examining its role in the 21st century. You can join the conversation. Religious fundamentalism is often blamed for global conflict. Should it be blamed? Is there any role that religious fundamentalism might play in resolving conflict, in finding peace? Give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now is John Esposito. He is University Professor of Religion and International Affairs at Georgetown University and author of Unholy War, Terror in the Name of Islam. Among many books that John Esposito has written, he has been a very strong voice on understanding fundamentalism, Muslim, Christian, and other fundamentalisms. John, open this debate for us. What is fundamentalism?
Well, the term fundamentalism itself actually emerges in the early 20th century, and is primarily, it grows out of the Christian experience, although in contemporary times it is increasingly being applied to other faiths, especially in the last 30 years. As it emerged, it basically was based on notions such as the infallibility of Scripture, the sense that Scripture presents a historical record. And increasingly, if we look at modern forms of fundamentalism, they are reacting, as was the earlier form of Christian fundamentalism, to the excesses of modernity. So some people say it's anti-modernism, but it's the excesses of modernity. For example, modern forms of fundamentalism tend to feel under siege in terms of secular society and secular values, modern popular culture. Tend to emphasize family values and the importance of family values, and often with that are anti-gay rights. They tend to have a messianic tendency, tend to look to the restoration of a past golden ideal or a past golden age. But I think this notion of being under siege by a secular society and the need, therefore, to re-inject religious values in society has come to play a very significant place.
It's very clear that this is what ties the fundamentalists together, or maybe it's why we call them fundamentalists. I think I'm still curious, though, about the phenomena as it exists within each different faith. In other words, there seem to be different streams. For example, there's some who just see fundamentalism as a return to traditions, to religion in a very secular world, and they seek out that ground. For other people, it's a very political realm. It involves the politics of religion and an increasing voice on the questions of moral values. And in yet another realm, and the one that the media, I think, covers most closely, it is an expression of violence. It is the sense that we have of the news every day when we see a suicide bombing in Israel, or when we see suicide bombings in Iraq, or in years past when we've seen violence at abortion clinics in the United States, or when we see the assassination of Rabin in Israel by a Jewish settler. Help us to tease out all of these different pieces within the different faiths, if you can. It's a tall order, but it's an important issue, and it's one we want to get at. Help us break it down.
Well, I think that you do tease it out quite well. I mean, one of the most important distinctions that I think we need to make is between what I would call mainstream fundamentalist an extremist or violent extremist fundamentalist, because we obviously usually take note of fundamentalism, A, when it's political, and B, in fact, B is probably more the A, when it deals with violence, we then have a tendency to distort that part of the reality. I think one does have to begin with something that you said a couple of times. And certainly for people in many faiths, they at a certain level, they would all say that they go back to the fundamentals, or they embrace the fundamentals of their faith, whatever those fundamentals might be. Now, certainly for Jews, Christians, and Muslims, a sine qua non would be their sacred scriptures. Mm-hmm. But I think that one has to realize that when you move beyond that, when you start talking about fundamentalist movements as it's often used today, then these fundamentalist movements are seen as over and against what one might call more liberal forms of religious faith. Mm-hmm. So, for example, they are seen as over and against mainstream Judaism or mainstream Protestantism or mainstream Islam. Mm-hmm. Now, where it begins to get complicated, but this shouldn't surprise us, you know, within religious traditions, there are many ways to many interpretations, and so you wind up with many schools of thought. The same thing happens with fundamentalist movements. They may share within a faith as well as across faiths some commonalities, but there are differences, if nothing else, not only differences due to the way in which one reads one scripture and history, but also the very personalities that lead them. Often they are charismatic personalities.
Right. Now, that would be kind of the terrain that I think might begin to confuse our listeners. So I want to back up, and I want to start just to remind listeners of the broad framework here. And I was really struck by one phrase you said there, which is mainstream fundamentalists, because those of us who are out here in the world, and those people who are devout within their own faith, I've heard many voices in my travels as a reporter covering religion. I've heard many voices say they feel their faith is hijacked by this fringe. I know what you mean by mainstream fundamentalists. I think I know where you're taking us, but let's back up, allow people who are members of these three Abrahamic faiths, who really don't like that moniker, fundamentalism, yet feel pulled to their faith. How can you maybe more precisely separate that out for us?
Well, I think that, for example, if you take Christianity, you have, and certainly within the American situation today, you have what I would call mainstream fundamentalists, your mainstream evangelicals and Baptists. They're different from the more militant evangelical and Baptist voices, people like Pat Robertson, Franklin Graham, mm-hmm. Jerry Falwell, in the way that they view people within their faith who disagree with them, let alone people of other faiths, other religious traditions. But where you really have a problem is when the more militant-type theology spills over and is appropriated by extremists who, for example, blow up abortion clinics, you know, who kill people. Now, that same rough movement or paradigm can be applied to Judaism or to Islam. Mm-hmm. Within Islam, you have people who are very conservative or, if you will, traditionalist. You have people who can be referred to as fundamentalist, people who emphasize even more rigorously not just the fundamentals of their faith, but a kind of more literalist interpretation of their faith, and a more exclusivist theology where, you know, if I'm right, you're wrong.
Right.
Which is also very much part of a kind of fundamentalist worldview, mm-hmm. that if my interpretation is right, then other interpretations are wrong. Then right. The question becomes, what do we do about that?
Okay. One question before we get to that question would be, is this a phenomena that you see growing? Is this on the rise across these three monotheistic faiths of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam? Do we see fundamentalism in all three of those faiths increasing its number? And how do we have any way to really measure that?
I think that one can see in the last 20 or 30 years, clearly, we see a global religious resurgence, if you will, And this generally means that many people within faiths, you know, many people of faith take their faith more seriously in terms of religious observance. At the same time, we also see a growth among those of a significant minority of people who embrace fundamentalist forms of faith. And for many, this means not simply that I embrace this for myself, but that I wish to see my values, because I have a sense of community, implemented within my community. Now, that community is often interpreted not simply as my faith community, but also my broader society. In other words, how can I be the believer that I believe God wants me to be if I happen to live in a society whose values, take the abortion issue for some, go against my faith? This form of faith is clearly on the rise. We see it, certainly we can see it in the United States, and we can measure it. Look at the increase in recent decades in terms of mm-hmm. media, the special channels of various faith groups, and look at the involvement of faith groups within the electoral process. We've had, fundamentalists run for office, and we've seen them as a significant force in presidential and local politics.
You can see it, John, across the landscape. It's a powerful, emotional issue. It means a lot to people of all different faiths, and we're talking this hour about religious fundamentalism, Christian, Muslim, and Jewish. You can join the conversation. Do you think religious fundamentalism unfairly carries a negative connotation? Now, what role do you think fundamentalism might play in the future? Will it always be a source of conflict? Can it be a source of hope? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Charles Sennett, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Charles Sennett, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about religious fundamentalism this hour. We're trying to hear the music of religion in its many different keys. And we're trying to understand, why is it that the media and the secular culture of the West seem so tone-deaf on this issue? You can join the conversation. The fires of fundamentalism are often blamed for global conflict, but is that fair? Is it accurate? What role could fundamentalism play in the 21st century in terms of solutions to conflicts, not just conflicts? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me this hour is Reverend Bob Schenck. He is president of Faith and Action in Washington, a Christian outreach group. It's a Christian outreach group to elected and appointed officials on Capitol Hill. Reverend Schenck, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
So let's start right away. I mean, would you call yourself a Christian fundamentalist?
Yes, I suppose I would, although I object to, as many religious fundamentalists do, the use of that term in a pejorative. I think it's become, in the popular culture, an insulting term, and so often I have to clarify, what do you mean by that? But yes, I think in the strict classical sense, I would consider myself a fundamentalist.
What makes you a fundamentalist?
Well, again, I think that your previous guest, Dr. Esposito, outlined that very well. There are certain fundamental truths of the Christian faith that are very important to someone like me. For example, the inerrancy of the Bible, the virgin birth and deity of Christ, the doctrine of atonement by the grace of God, the bodily resurrection of Jesus, and the authenticity of miracles and the biblical record. And what fundamentalists do is they take those very seriously and feel that they are very important to preserve. So that's how I would, I guess, basically define my own fundamentalist experience, is that I feel it's terribly important that we preserve those basic tenets of the Christian faith mm-hmm. in order to preserve Christianity.
So many Christians wonder, though, why that strict, even some would say brittle, adherence to the tenets of the faith is the focus of people who would at times call themselves fundamentalists, and we don't use that word in a pejorative sense here. We're trying to understand this issue and those who would call themselves that, who feel that they want to return to the fundamentals of the faith. But I would turn the question to you and say, do you feel that within the Christian realm of fundamentalism, that enough of the groups that are represented are turning their shoulder to the wheel of resolutions of conflicts, of trying to find understanding, of trying to work with other faiths to resolve conflicts, of trying to apply that moral code not only to real serious hot-button issues from abortion to gay marriage, but to questions of poverty and questions of the war in Iraq, for example?
Well, I do think on the whole, yes, although I think most of the focus now is in the area of specifically religious conflict. And I'll give you an example. There's a wonderful exercise that is going on right now. In fact, I'm very much personally involved with it, in which American Christian fundamentalists are meeting with Islamic fundamentalists. The most recent encounter took place in Morocco. I was there. I was part of the exchange. And it had a profound effect on both sides of the dialogue, because what we discovered was that as religious fundamentalists, although we are Christian fundamentalists, and they, of course, would consider themselves as Islamic fundamentalists, we speak a common religious language. And I think that's where a lot of this conflict is generated from, even within our own country, is a breakdown in communication. Religious people speak a distinct language. And when we discovered that we speak a common language about the things that we are really concerned with, suddenly the ice was melted. And we had a wonderful meeting of hearts and minds, and it was quite profound.
Reverend Schenck, that is a beautiful point for us to turn to John Esposito, who is University Professor of Religion and International Affairs at Georgetown University, and someone who is the author of many books on Islam and on fundamentalism. And Dr. Esposito, I wanted to ask you about that. You know, I've found that the world out there, when you're dealing in the realm of religion, is quite often not divided so much by the political left and the political right, but by a kind of vertical, almost spiritual definition of how people communicate, whether they're up or down in terms of their faith. And that might be place for common ground among the various expressions of fundamentalism, both Christian and Muslim, and also Jewish as well. What is your sense of that? Do you see potential within these movements of fundamentalism to find common ground, as was found in Morocco?
Yes, and I think that the description of what Reverend Schenck referred to, I think it's very important for us to focus on that. I think, ironically, historically, individual religious fundamentalist groups have tended to be very exclusivist when it comes to other religious traditions. But the irony is that I think increasingly today, faced with secularism and the threat of secularism to religion, that can often bring people together across faiths. And when they actually come together and get to speak and know each other, they begin to see that, yes, there are distinctive differences and things that divide, but they begin to see that there are these kind of basic commonalities. As the Reverend said, there is a kind of basic religious language and kind of basic agreement on a worldview that can in fact bring people together rather than divide them the way it has regrettably in the past.
Okay, well, let's turn now to some of our callers and bring some of them into the conversation. We have Don, who is calling from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Welcome, Don.
Hi, this is Don. Yes.
Do you have a question?
I actually have a comment, and then I have a question.
Okay.
I'd like to read to you a quote that I happen to carry with me, real short. It says, "For all its pious moralizing, the fundamentalist movement is less about right than self-righteousness, less about faith than intrusion, and less about God than power." And I think the context, and I believe I clipped this from a Leonard Pitts column, but I think the context of that discussion had to do with people that are using religion for politics, or the militant forms of fundamentalists who insist that if they're right, you're wrong, and we all run into that locally.
So do you have a question?
Well, the question I have is that a fair assessment?
Okay, fair enough. Let's put that right to Reverend Shank. And Reverend Shank, if you can respond to that.
Well, you know, I guess we're all human, and it's interesting, often when I'm in a debate, this kind of question, or even sometimes it's a veiled accusation. You know, you're accusing me of being benighted, and yet really, in the statement itself, I'm the one being accused of being the narrow-minded, bigoted, benighted fundamentalist. So I guess we all have our opinions about each other, but I do think
we are
in very significant transition within religious fundamentalism as a whole. And I'll go back to my experience in Morocco, where we sat at a table, and I remember one of the spokespersons from this very conservative Islamic movement in that part of Africa said to me, "Our problem is that we feel you want to turn our daughters into prostitutes." And I was so stunned at his statement. I said, "What would make you say that?" He said, "Well, look at what you export, the videos. We see Britney Spears dancing in a way a prostitute wouldn't dance in this country." And I said, "Well, we have an equal concern over the moral situation in our own culture among young people. We want to see modesty and so forth." He was stunned at that, and at the end of that exchange, we actually hugged one another and kissed one another's necks. And, you know, I think we're seeing fundamentalism move from a defensive, reactionary posture to a very productive outreach to one another. And I think perhaps in the beginning, when everybody felt they were under siege, people have defensive reactions, and they can often be read.
Okay, I think that I,
bad motive.
Charles, can
just,
I make a comment?
Yeah, sure. I want to come back to you. I just wanted to say thank you, Reverend Shank. That is a hopeful note. The things that were happening in Morocco are hopeful. Thank you for joining us. John, you wanted to respond.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we need to keep in mind here, too, is that, yes, certain forms of fundamentalism clearly, rather than being concerned about right or into self-righteousness, and this is ironic since in most faiths, I mean, certainly in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, it's God that's the judge. But the problem you have is that some fundamentalists, like lots of other kinds of believers, often act as if they've got God's ear. And the issue of God and power is also there because, you know, people look and say, but we see a number of these forms of fundamentalism, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, who really want power, or Hindu fundamentalism. But I think the other thing we have to keep in mind is that often religious fundamentalists live in a world that at times seems to be dominated by secular fundamentalists. That is, you have people for whom their notion of secularism, and it can be a very rigid notion of secularism, not secularism as separation of church and state so that no faith is privileged, and a recognition that separation of church and state does not necessarily mean separation of religion and politics, but secular fundamentalists who define the world in terms of their belief, and therefore anybody who disagrees with them is abnormal or deviant.
That is a view that we in the media don't pay enough attention to, secular fundamentalism. I want to just say that we have callers on the line, and we're going to get to them in a moment. And before we do, I want to introduce Mahmoud Al-Rashid, who is joining us from London. Welcome, Mahmoud.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi. Mahmoud Al-Rashid is the publisher of ML Magazine, and he's the legal affairs spokesman for the Muslim Council of Britain. Mahmoud, if I can, I want to start with the same question that I started with the Reverend, and that is, do you consider yourself a fundamentalist?
I wouldn't like myself described as that because the term connotes such negativity.
Fair enough. I've never heard anyone really want to be pigeonholed that way. That's fair enough. Tell us how you would define your beliefs, and does it involve some of the fundamental applications of Islam?
And sorry, as John was saying, the term really originates in the Christian tradition.
Okay.
The way, if it is to mean something very, very simple, i.e. people of religion going back to the origins and the texts and trying to understand and interpret them in today's life, today's circumstances, today's conditions, then yes, that's something very much which I try to do, and those of my fellow Muslims, we try to do, to understand what religion is all about. What is the message, essential message that God is trying to tell us? And when I go back, very early on in the Quran, you have the description of when God is about to create mankind, create human beings. He announces to the world that I am going to create a khalifa, i.e. a custodian, a steward for this world. Now, that is the description of mankind. So if we can accept that, if Muslims can accept that the role of human beings is to act as custodians of this world, then I don't think we can engage ourselves in much of the violence that's happening in the world.
Okay. Mahmoud, thank you. That is an excellent point. I want to hold that right there, and we're going to come back to you. You're listening to On Point, and this is Charles Sennett. We have callers who have been waiting to get into the conversation, and I'd like to bring in Ray, who is calling from Houston, Texas.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. We don't see violent attacks on civilians carried out in the name of Judaism or Christianity in today's world. Since these faiths share a connection to Abraham, what gives organizations like Al-Qaeda the philosophical or moral permission to do this, and are there similar examples in the past of these other two faiths?
Okay, that is a very good question. Let's have both Mahmoud al-Rashid and John Esposito answer that. Mahmoud, I'd like to go to you first and ask you to address that caller's concern. Why is it that we have seen a violent fringe within Islamic fundamentalism express itself in such a dramatic way? And are you worried about what that means for the future of Islamic believers like yourself?
No, of course I worry, because as I see it as a distortion. But then I feel callers like, Ray. I feel callers like Ray miss the other side of the story. What exactly is the American, or has the American army been doing over the last 50 years? Hiroshima, Vietnam, Iraq, you know, it's killing innocent civilians. You know, you have to see the other side of the story as well.
Well, tell us about that other side. Like, for example, when you're on the so-called and much fabled Arab street and you're talking among Muslims, do you feel that they see the overwhelming power in Iraq, for example, or the way in which the United States has responded in Afghanistan? Do they see that as an expression of Christian fundamentalism?
Well, certainly the language used by the current president, George Bush, gives it that flavor when he started off talking about crusades. Hmm. When he says that he's more or less being directed by God, then, and he is a Christian, then of course it comes across as Christian aggression.
Hmm. All right. Mahmoud al-Rashid, thank you very much for joining us. Dr. John Esposito, I'd like you to come in and address that caller's point. Is there something qualitatively different that we need to address in looking at fundamentalism when we see violent expressions of what we have come to call fundamentalism so much more pronounced in Islam than in Christian and Judaism? Or is that a completely wrong way to look at this?
Well, let me first mention that readers who want to get a sense of where Islam is coming from in terms of popular sort of culture as well as a faith ought to take a look at ML Magazine, which is really quite good. I think that the caller makes a very good point, but I think that what the caller blocks out is that, in fact, violence and terror continue to be committed by people of all faiths. The real point, though, it seems to me, for example, Baruch Goldstein, who walked into a mosque in Hebron and slaughtered people at their Friday prayer, who was a Jewish fundamentalist. And we see Christian fundamentalists doing something, committing actions. I think there are two points that need to be kept in mind. All terrorists, religious terrorists, are people who hijack their religions. Their religious traditions clearly draw a line between the use of legitimate forms of violence and terrorism. But I think a part of what Ray was asking is a very good question, very, very few people ask, and that is to look at the world and say, why do we see so much more violence and terror committed seemingly by Muslims?
John Esposito, thank you very much. We're going to come back. We're discussing the reputation and the reality of religious fundamentalism this hour. You can join the conversation. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Charles Sennett, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
This is On Point. I'm Charles Sennett, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about religious fundamentalism this hour, and you can join the conversation. Religious fundamentalism is often blamed for global conflict, but should it be blamed? Does it have a role in any forms of peace or resolution of those conflicts? Can we see something positive coming out of this phenomenon of fundamentalism? Let us know what you think. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me again is Mahmoud al-Rashid, who is on the line from London. And Mahmoud al-Rashid, I wanted to just throw this back to you and talk to you a little bit about the way in which so many in the West, particularly in America, have come to link the words fundamentalism and Islam. I mean, we can talk about many different kinds of fundamentalisms. That is the goal of our show today, to try to shed some light on this very fiery issue. But we also have the reality that for many people listening out there, there is a connection between the words Islamic and fundamentalism, and particularly a very violent expression of that that they see over and over again. Can you walk us through your sense of the ways in which Islam is perhaps experiencing a broad movement of a return to the faith? And I'm wondering if you can maybe address a question that is often raised in the Middle East, which is, where are the moderate imams? Why aren't they speaking out more to reclaim their faith, which, as Dr. John Esposito put it, has essentially been hijacked?
You see, one of the problems is that the Muslims, certainly those of us who are living in the West, do not have the access to the media, which would be necessary under these circumstances to put forward the message which majority of Muslims would believe in and would want to portray. You see, what we see, the linkage of Islam and fundamentalism really came about very sharply in the UK, particularly. Now, I can only speak of the UK experience, of course. I've lived here all the time. After the revolution in Iran, the Khomeini revolution. But it was brought very close to us during the Salman Rushdie crisis. And that's where really a lot of the Muslims in the UK got labeled as fundamentalists because of the their opposition to the abuse in that book to the Prophet Muhammad. Now, you asked about the renewal of Islam. I mean, over the last century, it has been a very much the fundamentalist Islam, and I mean that in its non-pejorative term, has been very much an anti-colonialist movement, trying to take off the shackles of colonialism in the Middle East and in the Asian countries, India. And that's why you had people like Maududi, and in Egypt, people like Hassan al-Banna, essentially people who were fighting the colonialist rule. And they went back to the Quran, and they said, look, in the Quran there is evidence for us to live an independent life and where we have to fight off our oppressor.
Mahmoud, would you say it's fair to say that those anti-colonialist movements actually used Islam, in a sense, they were using it as a political tool. And I wonder if you feel today that once again this broad movement of a return to the faith is being used politically, not just in an anti-colonialist sense, but in a very, very aggressive anti-Western sense.
Well, you see, there's a difficulty here. One of the sayings of the Prophet Muhammad is the greatest jihad one can do is to speak the word of truth to the oppressor, in front of the oppressor. So politics and religion, Islam, is very much intertwined. The expression of religion often takes a political form. We cannot just be passive religious observers. one has to have a social impact. A Muslim has to have a social impact, a positive social impact, if I may add. I mean, I highlighted that earlier. We see ourselves, or should see ourselves, human beings, as custodians of this earth. So we have to have a positive social impact on society. And that often involves, invariably, it has to involve politics.
Mm-hmm. All right. I appreciate
you. Prophet Muhammad embodied both religion and politics in his life.
Right. And that is always something in Islam that you see, that politics and religion is inextricably woven together. It's one fabric. I think that is a unique expression of that faith in many ways. And thank you very much, Mahmoud al-Rashid, for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to turn now to Jerusalem and bring into the conversation Yossi Klein Halevi, who is a senior fellow at the Shalom Center, which is a Jerusalem think tank. He's also a very elegant writer who has shed a lot of light on fundamentalisms, and particularly had a unique journey through fundamentalisms in his travels in what some would call the Holy Land. He is the author of At the Entrance to the Garden of Eden, A Jew's Search for God with Christians and Muslims in the Holy Land. Yossi, thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Good to be with you.
Well, we're trying to do something difficult today, which is we're trying to get our minds and even maybe our hearts around this issue of fundamentalism. And I wanted to ask you, as I've asked some of the other people who've joined us today, just would you ever describe yourself as a fundamentalist, small f?
God forbid.
Okay. But you certainly are a person of faith, or certainly drawn to a wonderful journey of searching for God. And I wonder how you would describe yourself then.
Very much as a religious pluralist, someone whose language of God, whose intimacy with God is expressed in a Jewish language, but who sees all faiths, all the world's major faiths, as equally legitimate languages of intimacy, equally legitimate paths to God.
Okay. Do you think that there is perhaps some common ground among the devout of all three faiths that hasn't been very well explored, that could provide some sense of community in a search for resolutions to conflict rather than religion continually being painted into a corner as the source of conflict?
Well, the conflict, the religious conflict that has interested me more and more in recent years is not the conflict among the faiths, but the conflict within each faith. And the struggle, I think, is the same in Hinduism today, in Judaism, certainly in Islam, in Christianity. And that is a struggle between those who acknowledge that God can speak multiple languages, that God can reach out to different people in different faiths, and those who believe that God only speaks one language and only understands one language of prayer. And that struggle will really determine the future of each of the faiths.
All right, Yossi, that is beautifully pulled together. I want to turn that thought over to John Esposito, and I want to ask you, what do you make of that? Is there really this kind of pulling apart within the individual faiths themselves that may be the more lasting impact of fundamentalism than the expression in the outward world?
I think Yossi's right on the mark. I think that, if you really look at the tensions, certainly, that have existed within religious traditions rather than across religious traditions, and increasing tensions within traditions, it's between those who have a more exclusivist and those who have a more inclusivist approach to theology. Those that tend to say, if I'm right, everybody's wrong, and not just people of other faith, but also people within my faith who hold a different interpretation, on the one hand, and others who are saying, look, in the 21st century in particular, with increasing globalization, we've got to, realize and reappropriate, if we reread our scriptures correctly, that indeed religious pluralism is and can be part of our faith, that God can speak to a variety of communities, Now, that doesn't mean that if I belong to one community, I may not feel that God has spoken to my community in a very special and unique way, but that doesn't make impossible the idea that God speaks to other communities.
Okay, John, thank you. That is a point that I want to put out there to callers. We're discussing religious fundamentalism. I'm Charles Sennett, and this is On Point. And I want to go right away to a caller in Pensacola, Florida, who's been waiting patiently. And go ahead, Joe, your question.
Hi, Charles. Thank you for allowing me a voice in this discussion. My question is this, and it was very nicely just expressed by one of your guests, John, I believe. If there is division within each faith, not to mention this division between different fundamental truths are held by each of the, by those within a faith, by those between the faiths, then how could the introduction of any fundamental belief, and lowercase f, how could the introduction of any fundamental belief into a societal discussion, mm-hmm. where you've got the secular, at least, portion of society, how could that be anything but divisive? I don't see how there's any way that the introduction
okay.
of a fundamentalist belief could be unifying.
Joe, that is a question. I got it. I think it's the core of what we're trying to get at. If the fundamentalists believe I'm right, you're wrong, how do we go forward? John Esposito?
Well, I think that this is where, again, well, first of all, I think that there are ways in which, there are areas in which what I call mainstream fundamentalists, certainly their beliefs would dovetail with other believers and indeed with secular people in terms of values, although there are very strong differences. I think the more critical area is to have faiths that embrace a broader notion of religious pluralism and tolerance, because then you open up the ways in which both believers and non-believers can agree on a variety of areas and issues in society. There are always going to be differences, just as, frankly, if you look at social policy or if you look at the Supreme Court, there are enormous differences, even if we say that, you know, people are just operating on their secular values or their interpretation of the Constitution.
John, can I ask you about something that I often have seen and that some people would view as almost cloaked pluralism or an attempt at an interfaith connection that has raised some suspicions, and that is Christian Zionism, the notion of Christian Zionists working together with Israel in a very political realm with a very unique interpretation of the end of times, almost apocalyptic visions. And it links Christian fundamentalists and some what we could call Jewish fundamentalists in the West Bank. And I wanted to ask both you and Yossi Klein Halevi to lay out that terrain for us. Could there be negative or detrimental efforts in these interfaith experiments? Or should we just be positive about any attempts in any way for these different streams of faith to try to come together?
My read of the Christian Zionists here, I would obviously defer to Yossi in terms of the perspective from Jerusalem and Israel. But my read of the Christian Zionists are not that they're reaching out necessarily to Jewish fundamentalists. They've been reaching out to the Israeli government more broadly. In other words, mm-hmm. Christian Zionists, for their theological reasons, wind up getting involved in the politics of Israel. It's not as if there's a kind of reaching out theologically, because at the end of the day, Christian Zionists do not believe that, for example, that Jews can be saved unless they
right.
convert at the end of time.
That is one of the real anti-Semitic expressions of that theology, I think. I don't know if I'm right about that. Yossi Klein Halevi, maybe you can back up for a second and just explain to us the phenomena of Christian Zionism, how important it is in the West Bank, Gaza, Samaria, and Judea, as I think many would call it, and just try to lay some of the landscape for us. Show us around this issue and talk to us about whether or not Jewish fundamentalism and Christian Zionism are on the rise or more prevalent somehow in Israel and in the discussion.
Whoa, big questions.
I know.
In terms of the impact of Christian Zionism certainly.
First, explain it for us if you can, because it's a very unique concept. A lot of people may not be familiar with it. I'd like to hear your sense of what it is and what its impact is.
Well, Christian Zionism goes back at least a couple centuries in the United States and in England in particular. It was the belief that which religious Jews have held for 2,000 years, which is that the restoration of the Jewish people to the land of Israel will be the trigger for the Messianic era. Now, there are different streams within Christian Zionism. There is an apocalyptic stream, which tends to get more attention. The mainstream Christian Zionist stream tends to support the Jewish people because of the verse in the book of Genesis where God tells Abraham, "I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you."
But Yossi, with some limited time remaining, I want you to try to steer us back to a sense of its impact. I think we got our head around the parameters of what Christian Zionism is. What's its impact in Israel? How is it influencing other streams of Jewish fundamentalism? And do you see fundamentalism as a phenomena on the rise in Israel? Is it increasingly playing a role in politics, or has it seen its heyday and maybe on the wane?
Yeah. Well, in terms of the role of Christian Zionism here, I see it as fairly minimal. There is a very successful organization that raises funds for charitable needs here among evangelical Christians. And that's about the extent of what I see as being the involvement of evangelicals in internal Israeli issues. Certainly, there's almost no involvement in Israeli political issues. Israelis tend to be very wary of outside influence from whatever direction.
Okay, I want to I have to stop you there because we're going to have to wrap this up. Yossi Klein-Halevi, once again, you've really shed light on an issue that has too much fire. And I want to thank everyone who joined us today, especially Dr. John Esposito, who's been on the line with us. He's the University Professor of Religion and International Affairs at Georgetown University. Thank you to Mahmoud Al-Rashid, publisher of Imel magazine, and Reverend Schenck. I'm Charles Sennett. This is On Point. We've been discussing the religious fundamentalism. We had many calls that we didn't get to, but I do think we shed some light on the issue, and thank you all for joining us. This is On Point. I'm Charles Sennett.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.